Good afternoon. We are here at St. Vincent's Arch Abbey in La Trobe, Pennsylvania, and we are privileged to be able to interview the prior, Father Earl Henry. And what is a prior, and how does the Benedictine community operate? We might say, what is its pecking order, and how is the interrelations in this pecking order? And then, what does it mean to family life or business life and people operating, again, as a community? We have so many different types of community out here. And we're privileged today to see what the Benedictines can tell us about real community.
Thank you. Thank you, Gene. I've been prior of the Abbey here since 1997. 13 years. I was asked to do the priorship for 5 years, and I agreed to that. And I've always been itching to do parish work, but when this came along, when I was already 67 years old, I said to the guys, "I guess you're my parish guys." So here we are. The way the abbey works is the abbot is the elected head of the place. He's elected by all the members, and then he appoints, like in a business model, would be the chief operating officer. It's the hands-on house manager and a stand-in for the abbot when he's not present. So the prior does administrative organization of work and prayer and everything we do. The prior does personnel administration, as guidance and advice and problem solving and spiritual direction. St. Vincent Arch Abbey is a large abbey, about 165, 170 members, the oldest one. At the present time is 90. We just lost our 103-year-old, and the youngest one is 23. In terms of family life, the abbot's called the father of the abbey, and at least inside, with a tongue in cheek, the prior is called the mother of the abbey. The abbot's like the authoritative figure who is in charge, and the prior has a little softer role, is to make it work. Sometimes the prior hears things that the abbot doesn't hear, as mothers hear things that the father doesn't hear. So the abbot is there to guide, to channel, to organize, to teach, to encourage, to use the monks for service and prayer, and the prior is secondary to help him do that. And, so it's a fun job. It gets into nitty-gritty stuff like cars and gasoline and janitorial services, and then it gets into serious stuff like spiritual direction and problem solving with the different monks. Gets into helping people in sickness, and it gets into, in the extreme cases, helping people to die. So the prior is like, it is like a family, and sometimes it's like having a house full of teenagers, and other times it's like having a house full of very educated men. So it's a fun one. It's a fun one.
As a prior, you don't operate alone. Where would your support come from? You all need support systems.
Yeah. It's a big support system. We have a big house here. We have 175 rooms in our Abbey building. So we have support systems like maintenance workers, lay people hired for janitorial services. We have them hired for car maintenance. We have them hired for like making our religious habits tailors. Within the monastery itself, there's a lot of help. I have a sub prior, which sub means under, means like he's the next man down. He's like number three in charge. The abbot's in charge of prior than the sub prior. So that's kind of the authoritative lineal authority model. But under that, there's just a lot of people who do the work. For example, we have an infirmary in this building for the sick monks. We have nurses there, RNs and LPNs and nurses aides, who are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They report to me and do the day-to-day. But so in a place of this size and the numbers that we deal with, there is a lot of support. And some of that comes from inside, from our own men, and some of it comes from outside. We hire them.
As a leader, I have two questions I'd like to ask you. Mm-hmm. One is, what do you find, or what have you found to be some of the most difficult tasks that you mm-hmm. were faced with, or problems? Mm-hmm. And then also, on the other side of the coin, how about what have been the most enjoyable, something that you really enjoyed?
Yeah. Well, to get to the difficult one, I guess that's an easier one. We work on an academic schedule here. There's a structure, daily structure in the monastery. Like, you get up at this time, there's prayers at this time, the Eucharist is at this time throughout the day. That's a basic structure. During the school year, academic year, most of our guys are in faculty members or administration or going to school, students. So there's a second structure laid on top of the basic monastery structure, the academic schedule structure. During the school year, it's relatively easy for the prior to know what people's schedules are and to depend on them to meet those schedules and you know where they are and what you're doing and when you can get in touch with them and what to expect. In the summertime, when school's out, there's more freedom in the schedule. So there's a basic Abbey schedule, but there's no academic schedule. So people have a lot of time on their hands for hobbies, for research, for writing, for recreation, for side trips, whatever. That makes it difficult for the prior because they're not on a strict schedule, so I call it free fall. They're all in free fall, and so summer's a little difficult. I'm the only guy that I know of any place in this world that looks forward to the beginning of school so that my schedule settles down a little bit. But on a more serious level, the most difficult task that I have is when a monk dies. And the prior is in charge of the funeral arrangements and meeting the family and all of that. And that's relatively easy to do. The most difficult one is to clean the house after he's gone. To clean the monk's living spaces after the monk has been. Anybody who's done this in their family knows how difficult that is. It's emotional. Everything you touch in that person's room has stories to it. And me, I've been around a long time. Everything I touch in that room reminds me of things that this guy did. So it's difficult from an emotional point of view. It's also got some humor to it whenever you see things that you didn't know about this guy, that you get surprises of his interests and you get surprises of some of the hobbies that he was doing or some of the writing that he was doing that you didn't know of before. But the most difficult thing is for me is the cleanup of someone after he's gone, and you make determination of what to save, what not to save, what to put in the archives, what's important for history at this place, what's important to send home to the family, and but so that's the difficult one. The pleasant one. I'm kind of a people interactive guy, and it's difficult, but it gives me great satisfaction in one-on-one discussions, counseling, interactions, problem solving with the monks. So the personnel side of this job is very satisfying to me. The administrative nitty-gritty stuff is easy for me to do, but it's kind of junky, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Good.
That reminds me of when we were studying administration at one time, they were talking about a leader. Of course, nobody will ever tell you what makes a good leader, but we had this 10x10 matrix, and you cut it in half, and a good leader was considered to be one who was very task-oriented on half one side, and the other was person-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hear that coming through,
person
orientation over the task orientation.
One of the personal ones that I get into with the guys, and you know, the prior is gives a lot of attaboys and encouragement, and also picks people up when they're down and that sort of thing. And also does some making sure the house is in order. And we're all guys, and can tend to get careless sometimes. You know, you don't pick the potato chips up if you drop them, you know, or you leave the kitchen a mess. It's the same as having teenage kids, you know. I always say to our guys, like, look, you know, don't think this is an institution. Think of this as some place that you are responsible to keep up. So when you drive the car, make sure you put gas in it before you bring it home for the next guy. When you drive the car, make sure you put the keys back on time because someone else is waiting for that car. Or when you go to the fridge and you drop a pitcher of milk in the fridge, make sure you clean it up because someone's got to clean it up. Don't think it's an institution that someone else would do it. So it's satisfying to do that kind of stuff, and most of the time the guys will say, oh yeah, you're right.
I think parents listening to this would say, do you have any tricks of the trade on how to keep
here's
order?
A trick. Here's a trick. Here's a trick of the trade. And I did it, my predecessors, priors, all different kinds of characters, but I'm not one to use authority. I don't come from authoritative kind of model. It's our place, guys. Let's keep it, and I'll lead you the way that I think it should be done. Well, here's the model. Here's the trick. Parents may want to use this. Within the first month of my priorship, I asked one of our guys if he would do this service at a local church in an evening. It was a little evening of recollection, and he's very able, and he had time to do it. And he said, no, I won't do it. Now it's a little test, I think. You know. So I said, well, Father, that's fine with me, but just remember, I owe you one no. He said, well, what does that mean? I said, it means I owe you one no. You're going to ask me sometime, and I'm going to say no. Wow, he said, what are you going to say no to? I said, I don't know what I'm going to say no to, but I'm going to do it. And he kind of turned around and said, well, maybe I ought to take this evening of recollection. that's a good idea. but that's that story, and it wasn't a planned ploy. It just kind of came out of me. But that story floated through the Abbey really quickly. So people don't say no to me. Of course they don't. Yeah. So parents, use that sometime.
Well, I can resonate with you, and I'm sure you can too, in regards to a person who passes away and going back over their belongings. I remember when my mom died, I was responsible. I know you had also parents that died.
Sure.
And the house became a ghost house to me.
Yes, yes.
Well, I think a lot of people go through this.
Yeah.
It's a rough time because of the memories. And the memories, if we didn't love people, we wouldn't have these memories, but we have those.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. It's just a tough thing to do. And I lost my parents, and it happens. But at the Abbey, we have 5 or 6 deaths a year. So I do this 5 or 6 times a year. And it really is something you can't do quickly. And at least I can't do it without emotion. I get our novices who are the young men looking at us here. After they're here 6 months or so, I ask them to help me. But sometimes I want to go through the place to make sure that there's nothing in there that scandalizes them too.
I know what you mean.
Another one of my favorite quotes of the rule to the monks and to myself is Benedict saying, "Let everything in the Abbey be treated as a vessel of the altar. Let all things be treated as vessels of the altar. Let everything be treated with respect and care and appreciation to the God who's given it to us." That's kind of a general rule of my priorship, and that's not only things, that's also people.
Well, I think on that note you hit a very high note about what is happening today in society. As you know, more and more we're hearing the complaint that we've lost a certain amount of civility, and especially coming from Washington, D.C., there's a lot of rumbling right now about the way Congress is operating.
Yeah.
And respect is at the core. We've lost a certain awe for each other.
Yep.
I don't think you could have said it better.
And everything is on party lines, you know?
Yep.
Sides. Families, abbeys, communities, the world should not be taking sides and refusing to respect the other person. So Benedict says, treat everything, everybody, and all things with respect. We have a lot of guests here at the Abbey, and this is my story too. This is my little thing too. Applying this to guests, now, the guests that come, some of them are friends, and some of them are of a political ilk that I agree with, or a religious belief that is mine. Others are of a little different twist. So they come to the Abbey for a retreat, or they come with for a few days off, or they come as guests of someone else. And sometimes we get criticized for having guests here who are out of sync with the political, local politics, or the world politics, or of even out of sync with the Catholic Church, and or out of sync with the way the Church says things should be run. We say that not everybody can come here. Everybody has to have a monk who says, yes, they're my friend and I vouch for them. So it's not an open. But I tell this story to people who complain to us about having a guest here who is not very popular, or who may have had some criminal thing back there. So here's my story. The old Gunsmoke program with dear Nat and the cadre of people in his cast. The lady Kitty was there, and Kitty was at the hotel, and Kitty she liked the guys, and the guys liked her, and she was bossy, and she ran her saloon. Kitty had a sign at the door that said, "Leave your guns at the door, boys." So, when guests come that we would like to throttle, you leave your guns at the door. Welcome the guests, as respect the guests as much as vessels of the altar. Do not disturb the peace by bringing up issues or controversies that makes the guest feel unwelcome. Leave your guns at the door. We say that to the guests, and we say that to our guys who are welcoming the guests.
I wish others high positions like yours could take that to heart, and but then I'll leave my guns at the door. Leave them be as they are. Thanks a million for the interview.
We'll go out and have a beer, and we'll shoot at each other.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.